under the rainbow, way up high. There's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby.
Fred Astaire described her as the greatest entertainer who ever lived. Judy Garland was an international star. Despite her professional success, she led a troubled personal life. Joining us to talk about the life and music of Judy Garland is Robert Wyatt, American music specialist and Smithsonian scholar. He's the director of music at Highfield Hall. Good morning.
Good morning, Mindy.
Probably that's the song most identified with Judy Garland, Over the Rainbow. And that's a song that was almost cut from the film Wizard of Oz.
Absolutely. You know, Harold Arlen and Yip Harburg had finished all the music for the Wizard of Oz. And then the directors and the producers decided they needed some ballad for Judy to sing before the tornado came along. So they wrote this wonderful song. It took Harold Arlen 8 days to really come up with the tune. But when they filmed it, it was just beautiful. But the producers then thought that they shouldn't have their star in a barnyard. So they decided to cut it. Well, everybody went upstairs in the music world and said, you can't cut
that.
Can't
cut that. And she was 16 when she sang that.
16 years old. So Arthur Freed, who was the big music director, he said, you got to keep that one. And they did.
And
it's the number one song in all American musicals. The AFI, the American Film Institute, decided it was the number one song.
Yeah. All right. We're going to go back to the beginning. She was born Frances Gumm in somewhere in Minnesota, right?
Grand Rapids.
And her parents were vaudeville performers. Little Frances took to the stage at 2 and a half.
Yes. Singing Happy Birthday. Her parents, when they moved to Grand Rapids, bought an old theater and they invited all their old vaudevillian friends. Baby Gumm got her first chance to sing for people when she was 2 and a half, and she wouldn't stop. They had to drag her off the stage.
See, she was a born entertainer.
And she was.
And she ended up singing with her sisters.
She did. The Gumm sisters were a pretty popular vaudeville act. When she was 9, they went nationally. Mm. And they had a pretty good success. They made a few films. They were on the radio. Judy was the reason that everyone listened to the Gumm sisters.
Well, you know, when you think about anything you've seen her in, she just has that sparkle, this something that just attracts you to her.
She came to life when people appeared to listen to her. Mm. It was a way of getting attention and of making people like her.
So we don't have a recording of that little performance when she was 2 and a half. So one of the early recordings we have is her at age 12. And this was what, the audition piece that she did for MGM?
Yeah, her mother, when you listen to it, her mother's the one playing the piano. So we don't know exactly how she got the audition, but probably it was Harry Warren who took her to MGM.
I used to dream that I would discover a perfect lover. Someday I knew I'd recognize him if ever he came round my way. I always used to fancy then he'd be one of the kind of godlike men, with a giant brain and a noble head, like the heroes bold.
Now, this wasn't the audition for the MGM. This was just an early performance, right?
This was a performance they actually found in Judy Garland's home when she moved out of Hollywood. Someone came in to clean the house, and they found this whole bunch of old recordings, and this was one of them.
So 1934, she was 12 years old. And when you listen to that, you listen to her voice, it's hard to imagine at 12 you'd have that kind of control and range.
She had the most unusual contralto voice, and she had her parents to thank for the wonderful larynx, but she had the personality to really deliver that type of sound.
Yeah. Was it a happy early life?
Not at all. Her mother was a real stage mom, so was constantly trying to take the girls to auditions and make them practice. And the father was troubled sexually, so the mother and the father didn't get along too well, and the father was always losing his jobs and things like that. Mm-hmm. It was a very troubled life. In fact, the mother started giving her amphetamines and barbiturates when she was only 9 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Just to keep her...
keep her up, her energy level.
Yes.
Wow. So the audition piece for MGM was... Zing went the strings of my heart.
Yes.
Right? So how old is she here when she's doing
this? Well, she was, it was in 1935, so she would have been 13 years old. She was taken to the studio, and immediately Arthur Freed and Roger Edens, who was the main music guy, just thought, here is the most incredible voice. So they took her right upstairs to meet Louis Mayer, who called her the Little Hunchback, by the way.
Not very
She was not attractive, but he loved her voice.
Dear, when you smiled at me, I heard a melody. It haunted me from the start. Something inside of me started a symphony. Sing went the strings of my heart. Was like a breath of spring. I heard a robin sing about a nest set apart. Oh, nature seemed to be in perfect harmony. Sing went the strings of my heart.
You can see why the studio executives went nuts when they heard
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. A 15-year-old girl singing like that, it was unheard of. But the big problem, she was not attractive. She was in the same studio with Deanna Durbin and Ava Gardner and Lana Turner. And Louis Mayer just thought she was a sort of an ugly little girl with a nice voice. So they never gave her any roles.
Right.
All she did was sing on the radio. This particular song, Zing Went the Strings of My Heart, her father was put in the hospital with meningitis, and she wanted to go see her father, but she had to go to the radio broadcast first. She sang on the radio, her father listened to her, and then he died.
Oh.
So she never got over that.
Right.
MGM didn't let her be with her father as he was dying.
Well, and what a horrible thing to be calling her the Little Hunchback. But it's not, she really wasn't ugly.
Not at all.
Not at all. I mean, she really had a style all her own, but that really led to a lot of self-confidence issues for her later on.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. Even with her talent, she even questioned, and I mean, my God, how could you question a talent like that? You know,
yes.
But she always was a little bit self-conscious.
Very self-conscious. That's why she just loved to sing, because when she sang, she didn't think about her body at all. She
yeah.
just thought about the people she was entertaining.
All right, so we said she was born Frances Gumm. Where did Judy Garland come from?
Well, Judy was a very famous song by Hoagie Carmichael, and we're not sure about the Garland. It might have been Robert Garland, the music critic. It might have been Garlands of Flowers. When they were heard as the Gumm Sisters, it was suggested they changed their name, mm-hmm. and they were sometimes introduced as a garland of flowers. So perhaps that's where she got it from.
Yeah.
We don't know for sure.
Don't know for sure, but Judy, we think, did come from the
Hoagie
Carmichael song. And you know, because she wasn't in the great beauty like the Lana Turners of that day, the studio really crafted sort of this girl next door kind of image
yes.
for her.
The backyard musical was very popular at that time, and Judy Garland was perfect for someone like Mickey Rooney. She mm-hmm. could be the best friend. She was not the girlfriend ever. She was just the best friend and always had good advice and would sort of make sure that Mickey Rooney got the starring
right.
roles.
Now, of course, you mentioned her mom giving her amphetamines at the age of 9, but that wasn't uncommon in the day for the studios. They did that with the young performers, especially performers like Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland, who were working all the time.
Absolutely. And for Judy, especially because she was considered overweight, so it helped her lose weight.
Mm.
Mickey Rooney finally got off of the pills, but Judy just never did. From the time she was 9 until when she died, she just was addicted to barbiturates and amphetamines.
It's hard to even imagine in this, in this day and age. But back then, amphetamines were available over the counter?
Absolutely.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Her mother just bought them in the drugstore.
Oh, my. We're talking about the life and music of Judy Garland with Robert Wyatt, American music specialist and Smithsonian scholar. He's the director of music at Highfield Hall. She does this lovely number. She sings at Clark Gable's birthday, and it's such a hit, it's put into a film in 1937. But was his birthday in 1937, or was that earlier?
No, it was a birthday party in 1937 for Clark Gable, and Roger Edens, who was really Judy's best friend at MGM, and her arranger and the pianist who played for her, said, let's put this song in at Clark Gable's birthday party. And she sang it and was very nervous, and Clark Gable came over and gave her a big kiss, and she just opened up. Well, Louis Mayer was there, and he said, my goodness, we have to put this into a movie. So they put it into the Broadway melody of 1938, which was filmed in 1937, just after Judy sang the song.
Yeah, so Judy basically is singing in the film to a photograph of Clark Gable.
Exactly.
But, all right, let's take a listen.
Dear Mr. Gable, I am writing this to you, and I hope that you will read it so you'll know. My heart beats like a hammer, and I stutter and I stammer every time I see you at the picture show. I guess I'm just another fan of yours, and I thought I'd write and tell you so. You made me love you. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. You made me love you. And all the time you knew it. I guess you always knew it. You made me happy sometimes. You made me glad. But there were times, sir, you made me feel so sad. You made me sigh, 'cause I didn't want to tell you. I didn't want to tell you. I think you're grand. That's true. Yes, I do. Deed, I do. You know I do.
You can just, I mean, imagine that birthday party with Clark Gable getting up and being so nervous that as she's singing that, and then to get that kind of response, it must have been
being
just
kissed
great.
By Clark
I
Gable.
I know,
oh,
right?
My.
Now, she was married 5 times.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about her love life.
Well, she had bad choices in many things, and in men was certainly no exception. Her first marriage was to David Rose, and he had to get his divorce from Martha Raye before he could marry Judy. And she was very upset because at the same time that she was engaged to David Rose, she was having this very exciting affair with Johnny Mercer. And in fact, I think she married David Rose so she wouldn't continue the affair. She really didn't want to break up his marriage and his newly adopted daughter. Mm. Her second marriage was to Vincent Minnelli, who really made her a star in Meet Me in St. Louis. She didn't like him at first, but then she just fell madly in love with him, and they had Liza.
Right, of
and
course.
And then she found out that he was a bisexual man, so she stopped enjoying him at all, and she got him cut out as the director of some of her movies. And she divorced him to marry Sidney Luft, who was actually the man that she was married to for the longest time, 13 years.
Mm.
And he was a real guy, and not only did he love her, but he also spent most of her money. He took her from being a multimillionaire to a person who was in poverty by the time they finally
divorced. And they had two children.
They had two children, Lorna, who was also a singer, and Joey. Mm-hmm. The fourth marriage was in 1965 when she was an older and very ill woman. Mark Heron was also another man who was bisexual, so she didn't stay with him long at all. And her last marriage was to a British guy, Mickey Deans, and it didn't last long at all.
Right.
But he's the one that found her dead in her bathroom.
Right. So going back to Vincent Minnelli, she met him when they were filming Meet Me in St. Louis. And of course, the trolley song, another big hit of hers.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, she didn't want to make the movie Meet Me in St. Louis, first of all, because it was another backyard musical, and she was being asked to be the girlfriend of the guy next door. And she didn't like Vincent Minnelli at all because he was a newcomer. It was his first film. He'd been a Broadway director in New York City. And she didn't like his ways. But then she started seeing the cuts of the way that he filmed her. And he framed her as a beautiful woman. And that's what made her fall in love with Vincent Minnelli.
With my high starched collar and my high top shoes and my hair piled high upon my head, I went to lose a jolly hour on the trolley and lost my heart instead. With his light brown derby and his bright green tie, he was quite the handsomest of men. I started to yen, so I counted to 10, then I counted to 10 again. Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Ding, ding, ding went the bell. Zing, zing, zing went my heartstrings. From the moment I saw him, I fell. Chug, chug, chug went the motor. Bump, bump, bump went the brake. Thump, thump, thump went my heartstrings. When he smiled, I could feel the car shake.
So the trolley song, you were telling me they had to go out and see what when they were writing the song, how a trolley sounded?
Yes,
what was that?
Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine were the writers. They used some old music, you know, some music from 1904 when the music was supposedly occurring at the World's Fair in St. Louis. But they also wrote some new songs, and Arthur Freed wanted a real trolley song. And when they wrote about trolleys, it wasn't good enough. He said, no, it has to sound like a trolley. So they went to the trolleys, they heard the bell, and everything was history after that.
That's funny. You talked about her, I guess, affair with Johnny Mercer.
Yes.
And he wrote on the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe, which we're going to hear. Tell us a little bit about their relationship. We know she married David Rose, as you mentioned. But
yes.
Prior to that, how did they meet and get together?
Well, Johnny Mercer and Judy Garland had met in 1939, but she was so busy with Babes in Arms and The Wizard of Oz that she didn't pay much attention. It was at a party, an engagement party, actually, for her marriage to David Rose that she met Johnny again. He was there with his wife. They danced. They confessed that they loved each other forever, and the next day they started their relationship. Johnny Mercer wrote some of his most fabulous songs because of Judy Garland. He wrote I Remember You, Old Black Magic, One for My Baby. She was an inspiration for him, and he truly loved her. But their affair lasted quite a few years, off and on. They truly did love each other.
Number 49, she's the only one that'll sound that way on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
All aboard, she's on her way.
See the old smoke rising round the bend. I reckon that she knows she's gonna meet a friend. Folks around these parts get the time of day from the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
Here she comes.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Hey, Jim, you better get the rig.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
She's got a list of passengers that's mighty big.
And they'll all want lifts to Brown's Hotel. Cause lots of them been traveling for quite a spell. All the way from Philadelphia, on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
I love the way they make the train sound so real with
absolutely
their voices. It's
well,
great.
Johnny Mercer grew up with trains in his childhood. He could hear the trains going by his house. He wrote lots of train songs.
Yeah, and this one was his first win as an Oscar?
Yes, he was nominated 8 times before he finally won the Best Song of the Year on the Academy Awards, and this was it, his song for Judy.
All right, so Judy, as we mentioned, struggled with addictions, but she also had a nervous breakdown in 1947.
The whole time at MGM was difficult for Judy, and she was to last for another 3 years.
And she spends time in a sanitarium.
Yes, and she went straight for a while. And the nicest thing about her recovery is she got to work with Irving Berlin and with Fred Astaire when she made Easter Parade. It was one of her finest films, and she loved being with Fred Astaire, who was her childhood idol, quite a bit older than she, but they had a great role together.
And, of course, he obviously was a fan of hers, as we mentioned at the top
yes.
of the show, calling her the greatest entertainer who ever lived.
Absolutely.
Yes. And she had a suicide attempt before this breakdown.
Yes. And again, and she was hospitalized in 1949. So from 47 to 49, she was
just
one sick
really,
woman.
Really tough time for her. And so she starts showing up late or not showing up at all on the film sets. So her last film before MGM fires her is Summerstock.
Yes, 1950. It was a good movie, and Liza had a cameo role in that, by the way. More interesting than that is that the moves that she didn't make. She was hired in 1949 to make the Barclays of Broadway. She couldn't show up for rehearsal, so she was fired, and Ginger Rogers got the role. It was Ginger Rogers' last movie with Fred Astaire, so I'm sort of glad that one happened. And then she was supposed to do Annie Get Your Gun, and she filmed all of the songs. But again, she had the same problem. When they would shoot her, she was so stoned that she couldn't stand upright sometimes. So they hired Betty Hutton. And the last movie that she would have made was Royal Wedding, again with Fred Astaire. So she could have made 3 movies with Fred, and they finally had to replace her with Jane Pell. And then Arthur Freed just had to fire her because he was losing sometimes weeks and weeks of salaries for everyone.
All right, so we're going to hear Get Happy from Summerstock.
Yes.
Thank you. life's troubles, come on, get happy. You better chase all your cares away. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. Get ready for the judgment day. The sun is shining, come on, get happy. The Lord is waiting to take your hand. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. We're going to the promised land.
When you think about her musical talent and her acting ability, I mean, she really was an amazing entertainer.
Absolutely. And perhaps she was the best when she was in front of an audience.
Right.
So after she was fired by MGM, she suffered for a little while, and then she got to work again. And she rented the Palace Theater and did a whole vaudeville type of show. She was supposed to be there for 2 days, and it lasted 19 weeks.
Wow.
And then she got a gig over at the Palladium Theatre in London, and she was a huge success. And between 1951 and 1969, she made 1,100 theatre, nightclub, and concert appearances. So she was always on stage.
And, you know, when you think about that, she had trouble showing up to the film sets, but she managed to do, and that's, as we know, not an easy task. Doing live theatre and clubs is very draining.
And she was always petrified. She suffered greatly in performance anxiety. But once she got on the stage, she completely changed.
That all took over.
Yes.
So the later years of her life, she also did a television show.
She did the Judy Garland. She did 30 of her own specials, and she was a guest at least 35 other shows. So a lot of TV.
Frank Sinatra was a guest with her. They had a little something going
they
on
did,
too, didn't they?
For quite a while. Frank Sinatra and Judy were the best of friends and lovers.
The next song that we're going to hear is actually performed with her daughter together.
Yes.
Wherever we go, whatever we do, we're gonna go through it together. We may not go far, but sure as a star. Wherever we are.
Together, that was what, 1964?
1964 is from Gypsy by Julie Stein and Stephen Sondheim. Liza and Judy had sung together many times, but this was one of the best. After 1954, Judy Garland only made a few more films. She made Judgment at Nuremberg, which was sensational, and she was nominated as Best Supporting Actress in that film, but she lost to Rita Moreno in West Side Story, so
oh,
she lost again. And then she made a movie with Burt Lancaster, A Child is Waiting, in 1963. And the same year, she made one more film, I Could Go On Singing, and that was with her friend James Mason.
Wow. And, you know, her daughter Liza has inherited some of that talent, I would say. She also is quite the entertainer. What was the relationship like with Judy and her children?
Well, she loved her children. She was a very good mother. But when she was on drugs, she was neglecting them and she was not taking care of them. And she was so sick when Liza was born with postpartum depression that she didn't spend much time with Liza as a child.
Mm.
In fact, the relationship really blossomed when Liza got older and was able to make recordings with her. Now, her daughter, her eldest daughter of Sid Luft, Lorna, she's a singer also.
Right.
So she had two singers.
So we are going to leave you with The Man That Got Away. But before we do that, this is another Harold Arlen tune. And Ira Gershwin, tell us that relationship of Harold and Judy.
Well, Harold was not Judy's lover. He was a best friend because he worked so much with Johnny Mercer. He wrote wonderful songs for Judy Garland. This is a song that he wrote after he was sort of done with Johnny Mercer, and Ira Gershwin showed up for A Star Is Born, and it was such a sensational film. She never had an affair with Harold Arlen because he was very happily married on his own.
But obviously she was an inspiration for his music.
Inspiration for
Harold
Arlen.
All right, so this is The Man That Got Away from A Star Is Born. We want to thank you, Robert Wyatt, American music specialist and Smithsonian scholar. He's the director of music at Highfield Hall. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Mindy.
And Robert will be talking more about Judy Garland's life and music Saturday, May 4th from 10 to 12 at Highfield Hall. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The night is bitter, the stars have lost their glitter, the winds grow colder, suddenly you're older, and all because of the man that got away. No more his eager call, the writings on the wall, the dreams you've dreamed have all gone astray. The man that won you has run off and undone you. That great beginning has seen a final inning. Don't know what happened. It's all a crazy game. Every trick of his, you're on to. But fools will be fools, and where's he gone to? The road gets rougher, it's lonelier and tougher. With hope, you burn up. Tomorrow he will turn up. There's just no let up. The live long night and looking for the man.